sending home in the yard. Finding memories, sending home. Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. I'm having me a drink. Feel free to do the same. It's been a rough day here in the Wrecking Yard. My wife and I had some, we had this cat we take care of and talked about her before, Mary Margaret. She had some little kittens that we've been raising. And we had two of them we was going to give to a friend of ours, a sweet friend of ours named Marina. And one of them I was going to keep named Possum. And I'd gotten real attached to little Possum. And this morning, about 4:30 in the morning, our piece of shit neighbors across the street left their gate open and their piece of shit dogs jumped over our 5-foot fence because they're big ass damn dogs. I don't know why people need these big ass damn dogs. We don't live in hunting land here, you know? Anyways, these piece of shit dogs jumped my fence and came in and tore my screened-in porch all to hell. I mean, just did a ton of property damage and killed all three of them kittens. And we think may have killed Mary Margaret, too. We can't find her body yet. One of the kittens' bodies I can't find. But I got the damn dogs on my video camera carrying the kitten around in its mouth, so I know they killed all three of them. I am beyond irrationally angry about it and beyond heartbroken. I'm trying to do the right thing. We called animal control to get them involved. Of course, it's been 9 hours and they haven't showed up to do their investigation because Houston City sucks and their animal control division's a freaking joke. And next steps, I'm going to get the damn sheriff. I'm not a big fan of police, but I'm going to get the damn sheriff involved before I do something stupid. Right now, I'm just trying to keep my head on straight. But I'm going to get the damn sheriff involved, and something's going to be done about this. And if I can scrape up enough money, I'm going to sue the shit out of these son of bitches, too. I am just, been back and forth between anger and heartbreak all day. I know it's cats, but they came into my property. They came in, as far as I'm certain, they came into my damn house. Lord knows, had I been awake at that hour and heard the commotion, I'd have sure got involved. But they're just like thieves in the night. Useless, no good. Just I got no use for a dog owner. Don't take care of the dog. Don't keep the dog on their own property. Got no use for it. Maybe out in the country, I don't give a shit what you do. But we're in the city here. They just easily be somebody's kid or anything else. That's enough about that. But it's been a bad day. It's been a real bad day. But this is one of those jobs that you got to do it, whether it's a bad day or not. Whether you're sad or not. Whether you're happy or not. Also, been fighting the most insidious beast I've ever run across is these. We got an infestation in the garage here of these things called no-see-ums. They're like nature's little tiny chainsaws. They're a special kind of evil. They're so small you have to squint at your own suffering to even guess what bit you. They're like angry little mosquitoes that got laid off from hell and decided to start freelancing. Tiny little airborne sadist. About the size of a coffee gram, but with the biting power of a piranha with Red Bull addiction. It's the females, of course, that do all the biting, naturally. But the males are too busy being useless and dying early. She's out here trying to make babies. She needs my blood to do it. Romantic. But they saw in your skin, I've got little bites from all over my legs and stuff. They've been getting me good out here. Yeah, it's one of the worst things. Nothing kills them. Nothing. I ain't found nothing kills them. I think we finally decimated their population thanks to a good friend I'm going to talk about here in a little bit. But if you're from the Everglades in Florida, you know all about these things. Anywhere it's 85 degrees and 100% humidity. They love early morning twilight, you know, when you're trying to enjoy a drink and some dignity. And I've tried DEET and citronella candles, and they just like they drink citronella like it's freaking Gatorade. And about the only thing I figure you can cover yourself in Vaseline. They can't bite what they can't land on, I guess. Or wear a full beekeeper suit, but the podcast might get weird if I had a beekeeper suit. Might be fun. I know one thing gets real. You can burn a tire, but don't do that. But it works. Just ask anybody who's ever gone fishing in Louisiana. Burn a tire, run them off. Duct tape your sleeves to your wrist. I've done everything I can to fight these things. Rub yourself down in mud like you're Arnold Schwarzenegger and Predator. Anyways, these things have been a beast. So, if you're ever out enjoying a peaceful evening in the swamp and you suddenly feel like your ankles are being slow roasted by invisible gremlins with box cutters, it ain't the devil, but they're probably on his payroll. Let's go into our sponsors this week. Sponsor this week, my good buddy Tim, because he didn't come over here to help me fight these no-see-ums. He came over here, he fogged this whole garage. And I think we whooped them down pretty. I still see one or two here or there, but got rid of anything where they could be breathing water, all that stuff. So you got something living in your attic that don't pay rent. You got something scratching in the walls, thumping in the crawl space, maybe a raccoon running a fight club in your ductwork. Wildlife Removal Services, LLC is who you call. They relocate wildlife, eliminate pests, mosquitoes, termites, all the little freeloaders. Tim's fast, professional, not afraid to climb in parts of your house you pretend don't exist. 832-745-2540. That's 832-745-2540. Call Tim Moss and tell him Jerry Wayne sent you. And they work everywhere from North Montgomery County up on Alaska, all the way down to Dickinson, and hell, he may even go to Galveston for you if you need it. But Tim will get rid of it. I think they go nearly to Beaumont the other way. He covers a wide area. Tim's a combat veteran. He fought in the 75th Ranger Battalion. He this is how good pest control Tim is. Tim got rid of Noriega. He's a good deal. He'll handle it. You just stay on the porch and act like you weren't scared. Happy to talk about this truck today. I am happy to talk about this. It's we're gonna go back to little Jerry Wayne, you know, little Jerry Wayne. And at the end, we'll do some testimonials. And I got some packages open. We went to the PO box, and holy cow, you guys showed out. So we're gonna open some packages too. But before we get into all that, we're gonna talk about a moment in time, 1955 to 1959. when General Motors took a look at the 3100 pickup truck and said, let's try growing this thing a backbone and a jawline. See, 1955 was a bit of a split personality year over at GM. First half of the year, they were still selling the old 3100 style, the old body style trucks, ones that look like they hauled hay and sins. But halfway through the year, they introduced what they called the second series. That's how you know a design's fresh. It's got numbers and fancy words attached to it. And then they just start calling the old one the first series, and we all just pretended like that made sense. Now, Chevy and GMC, you know, they're like siblings that shared a room but never shared tools back then. You know, now a Chevrolet and a GMC, they're the same thing. You use a few different options, whatever. But back then, they were two very separate companies underneath one umbrella. The Chevrolet stayed, they named their truck separately. Chevrolet stayed Chevrolet, straightforward, no frills. And GMC, on the other hand, got all mix and match with their engines. Used their own inline sixes, borrowed V8s from Pontiac. And if you need to pull a house off its foundation, they throw in an Oldsmobile boater like it wasn't no big deal. And for the first time, GM got a little highfalutin. You know, power steering, power brakes, optional V8s. Trucks with manners, if you will. The standard transmission was your old three on the tree. Just enough to confuse your cousin who never learned how to drive a stick. But if you want to feel like a ranch boss, you can get you a floor shift four-speed, or you could go whole hog with a hydromatic automatic, which sounded like it should power a spaceship, but really just kept you from spilling your coffee on a bumpy road. That year also marked GM's leap from a 6-volt to a 12-volt electrical system, which means now when you turn the key, it didn't feel like you was waking some old man up from a nap. But let's talk about the body. That's the big change. Let's talk about the body. The Task Force trucks. That's what the series was really called. I love that name. Sounds like they was fixing to deploy to Korea, you know? They come out swinging. They had the first wraparound windshield in the truck game. Deluxe cabs even if you ever seen a deluxe cab Taskmaster truck, they had a wraparound back windshield. Almost kind of like making up for the old 5-window 3100. You know, you had that full wraparound back there, which is, I suppose is useful. Those are blind spots. And the headlights, which used to just be stuck on top of the fender like an afterthought, were now integrated into the fenders, looking like they belonged there finally. The running boards disappeared. They put in-cab steps. And then there was a handy little footstep between the cab and the fender just in case you need to hop up and grab something that slid to the front of the bed, which can be helpful if you've ever tried climbing in the back of a truck with any kind of dignity. The fenders on the 55 second series had one-piece emblems and single headlights. Bed links, you could get a bed link in 6.5 or 7.5 feet. That's the only time that seven foot bed showed up in 55 before vanishing like your paycheck at a swap parts meet. GMC, for whatever reason, decided to hold on to the 6-volt system just a little longer, just to be ridiculous. 1956 comes around, they widen that hood emblem. They gave the fenders two-piece badges. Up high now, like they're real proud of it. It's the last year for the egg crate grill too, which is, you either like it or you don't. I was always kind of here or there. Then 1957, GM said, we want more grill, fewer rules. The grill got opened up like a bar tab on payday, you know. The hood, they flattened the hood out. They added those two chrome spears on top, give it that little splash of Bel Air flair. The fender emblems went from scripted to oval shape, less signature, a little more badge of honor, just in case your farm truck had dreams of prom night. Then in 58, they got all ceremonial on us, celebrating their 50th anniversary. GM says, boy, nothing says celebration like renaming your whole truck lineup after different kind of warriors. The light-duty trucks became Apache, the medium-duty became Viking, and the heavy boys were now Spartan. I had to think somewhere a marketing guy earned himself a bonus and a nervous breakdown. 58 is also the first year you get air conditioning in a truck straight from the factory. They redid the front end again, wider grill, shorter front end. And now they got four headlights. They moved the parking lights, moved into the center of the grill. And the hood now had kind of a flat valley in the center, in case you needed some extra places to collect rainwater. Got rid of the cameo fiberglass bed. That was the first year they put an all steel box on there, a smoothed out box, which you know me, this is the fleet side. On GMC, they called it a wide side, but Chevrolet was a fleet side. When Ford did it, they called it a style side. Those are my favorite. That's my favorite bed on pickup. I'm not a step side guy. No, I will say the step sides look good on the 50s models. I don't like them after the 50 years. I like them fleet sides. They're tough, all business, like an uncle who only speaks in warnings. You know, it's tough. In 1959, GM had run out of new tricks. The hood emblem got a little bigger. Fender badging got a little more decorative. Just to let you know, they was paying attention, you know. This is the last year. 59 is the last year you could order a NATCO four-wheel drive conversion from the factory. They call it a power pack. And while 1959 was the last model year of the Task Force trucks, they kept the Apache name until 61. But that's it. That's the Task Force era. Built with pride, driven with grit. Still sitting in barns across America, waiting on some poor soul with a ratchet set and a dream every once in a while. This truck I'm going to talk to you about today was a 1959 Apache. And I can remember this truck since I was just a little bitty old thing out in the wrecking yard. See, the wrecking yard, It wasn't like junkyards now. It wasn't like a pick apart or a junkyard you could just like pay to go in. Papa Clark, he knew what he had out there, and you could come down to the house. The house was down at the bottom of the wrecking yard. You'd come down to the house. Or if you knew him, you could call him. Or if he was out there at the shop and they had a little gate down at the dirt road, if they had that gate open, you could come down the dirt road to the shop if he was there. But he had him a full-time job during the day. He worked over E-Tex welding, selling welding supplies. I think he was like the shop foreman over there or something. But all the sales in the wrecking yard he made were face-to-face. You know, he'd haggle with you back and forth. And if y'all come to some sort of agreeable deal, he'd let you go pull the part. But damn, if he wasn't going to follow you out there and watch what all you was taking. You weren't going to walk out with a pocket full of bolts and a cross member or nothing like that. You was going to get what you paid for, and that was the end of it. When I was young, I can remember him and Uncle Bobby or my dad. They'd get a couple cars in, and first thing they'd do is if they wreck cars, you know, chances are the engine's still good. And so they'd go pull good engines out of them wreck cars, and they'd get them up on a little stand there, They had a couple different ones. They had engine stands, stuff like that, but they had some wooden stands they'd built, set these old V8s on with a shop hoist. And they'd set them engines up there and they'd test them and get them running. And by halftime, they pull a good engine out of water, get a good engine run. If they didn't already have a use for it or somewhere they need to put it or something they need to put it in, you know, he might sell that engine. They did it with transmissions too. And I'd like to tell you, I never seen him put sawdust in a transmission to quiet it down, but then I wouldn't be being honest with you if I told you that. He'd get them engines out there, and old man was good. I told you, he set timing by ear. I mean, a lot of people think they can, but Papa Clark could do it. I mean, you could test it with a timing light after. You weren't going to find no error. Old man was good. He'd set them engines by ear out there, him and my daddy. Sometimes Uncle Bobby would be out there working with him. And then sometimes, you know, about halftime, if he didn't have a buyer already lined up for that engine or something, they had this big old workbench in that shop, and they would line them engines up on that workbench. He'd keep them engines locked up in that shop where the ne'er-do-wells couldn't get to them till he found him somewhere to sell it or found something he needed to put that engine in. But there was a whole lot of shit out there in that wrecking yard that he just wasn't going to sell. For whatever reason, they meant more to him to keep them. And sometimes he would just buy, like I told y'all, he was eccentric. He would, you know, he'd buy 6 golf carts at a time, and he'd keep all them golf carts out there and take parts off of them and keep his golf cart running. Or he would, I told you, my granny liked him little Subarus and little GLs and stuff. And boy, he had about 6-7 of them little Subarus out there. He didn't just have one El Camino. He had about 4 or 5 El Caminos at one time. But then some stuff, like his truck I'm going to tell you about today, he had an attachment to. And, you know, he went to his grave without telling nobody what that attachment was. I got picking my dad's brain today trying to find out what his attachment to was that truck. And my dad said, you know, he didn't. That truck didn't. I thought maybe that truck belonged to my Papa Wiley, who was Papa Clark's dad. I thought that truck may have belonged to my great grandpa. My dad said, no. He said, your Papa just drug that truck up one day and had all kind of plans. He's going to fix it up. He'd say, well, I reckon I'm going to fix it up one day. But I don't know what the attachment was beyond that. Might not have been one. Might have just been that. The hope that maybe one day he's going to fix it. 59 Apache up. You say, I tell you, that's where I got the name for the wrecking yards. He's, I reckon I might going to fix that one day. Somebody say, boy, you want to sell me that, Bobby? I reckon I might. No, I reckon I'm going to fix that one. And it was just some stuff that people were asking me. No, it ain't sell. He didn't say too much about it. Just that was the end of it. I ain't going to sell it. One of those things was that orange 1959 Apache pickup. It's hard to paint you guys a picture. I almost want to try to draw it from memory, but the wrecking yard was on the side of a hill off Sexton Road. And at the bottom of that hill, there was a little dirt road, and that went to Granny and Papa's house. And then there was another fella that lived on a little further down that road. I had him a little piece of land. My Papa had sold it. And the wrecking yard was kind of a weird shape. It was almost shaped like Utah. It had like a not Utah. Is it Utah? Hell, I should have learned my geography before I tried to compare it to a state. Wreck yard had a weird shape. It was almost, it had like a dog leg that come down off of it. and went across that dirt road. He owned the land on both sides of that dirt road. He owned that road. Him and Granny's house was at the bottom of the hill. They had done the same thing as my mom and daddy ended up doing. They had a little plot of land there. They had plotted off, and they used that to get them a little Jim Walters house on there. It was a little three-bedroom Jim Walters home. It sat real high up off the ground because of the, what do you call that? The grade of the land it was sitting on. The front of the house was about 5 foot off the ground. The back of the house was maybe a foot or two off the ground. Had underpinning underneath it. And in the front of the house, my papaw had welded up a bunch of steel pipe and big old pieces of steel, and they had a big old steel porch. I bet if anybody ever tries to do anything to that house, it's going to take 3.5 winch trucks to get that steel porch off that house. I guarantee you that thing weighs a couple tons. Had a steel staircase he got somewhere welded up to it. When you went out the back door of that house, they had a little backyard and big old corrugated steel fence. And there was a doorway, and you walked through that doorway and you were in the wrecking yard. And off to the left, there was a couple of them old school buildings, little small storage buildings. And off to the right, there was a bunch of motorbikes. Probably, I don't know, man, I guarantee you probably 20, 30. Honda and Kawasaki motorcycles in various states of disassemble. There's a little trail went through them, and then you walk through that little section there, and right off to the left, across that trail, was the big shop, the big old metal shop. And if you look off to the right, the whole shop was built out of corrugated steel, big old giant shop. And flat steel, patchwork, and crap welded together on a wooden pole bar and frame. I seen pictures of my daddy and him building that shop. There's weeds and, you know, it was active piney woods forest, pine trees everywhere. But right when you come up that little T in that trail, that one went this way, one went to the left, one went to the right. But right across that T, there was that 1959 orange Chevrolet Apache pickup sitting in the weeds. And then probably about 4 or 5 foot to the left of that orange 59 Apache pickup, there was an orange 1954 five-window pickup. Just a little ways away. You went to the right on that trail, there was a little bitty one-room. Well, first, there was a bunch of old antique golf cars, like the old three-wheel kind with the handlebars and stuff like that. You know, I believe they were made by Cushman. And there was a couple Cushman scooters and a big old stack of old cabinet TVs. Like 10 or 12 of them stacked up like in a pyramid, some sort of thing. Of course, the wood was all coming apart of them from being out in the weather. I'm pretty sure they was non-functional. I don't know why he's keeping them. I did see Granny take a vacuum tube out of one and fix her cabinet TV with it one time, though. So maybe they were just parts. Hey, he had a reason for everything. I just don't know all the reasons. I got a little more time with him as an adult, maybe I'd have come across some of the reasons. But right there by a stack of TVs on that trail, there was a little bitty one-room house. And that house is where his dad, I called him Papa Wiley. I mean, we colloquially called him Papa Wiley in the family. But Papa Wiley is my great-grandfather. He was my granddad, Bobby Clark. He was his dad. And Papa Wiley lived in that little bitty one-room house until he died. Out there in the wrecking yard. I think I was, I did the math that he died in kind of late in the year in 79, so I'd been about 2 or 3 years old. Papa Wiley was a bit of a character, you know? He was an old junkyard man. Told y'all he was married to an old barfly named Alma. She was a first-class train wreck. And the story I've always heard is Papa Wiley owned his own junkyard in town for a long time. Had a real nice junkyard in town. And I think, based on the stories I heard, that he was fairly successful with it at one time. But when my papa, Clark, his son, got drafted and sent to Germany in 1957, if you're a little bit of history buff, you know, papa Clark served with Elvis. He was in the same unit as Elvis Presley. He got drafted, he got sent to Germany, and while he was away in Germany, Papa Wiley gave his own junkyard and property to his son-in-law, George Butler, who was married to my papa's sister, Jenilee. And I don't know much more about why that happened other than my papa was always kind of mad about it. They didn't really talk about it much. Even still, after all that, when Papa Wiley and his wife Alma split up, he didn't have nothing. He was staying out over in Sun Camp, rebuilding starters and alternators for a guy we call Old Man Powell. And when Old Man Powell died in the early 70s, Papa went and got his dad, Wiley, and brought him home to live with him and Granny. Which I guess went on for just a little while, but not very long, because Granny and Wiley couldn't get along. She didn't want her father-in-law living in the house with her. Apparently they fought like cats and dogs and couldn't see eye to eye on nothing. But if you knew my Granny, that's not really that crazy of a story. So I told y'all about Maurice. That was Papa's junkyard buddy, Papa Clark's junkyard buddy, Maurice Tisdale. Maurice Tisdale got a whole bunch of used lumber. And he gives it to Papa Clark. And Papa and my dad and my Uncle Bobby and my Aunt Barbara Jean, they built a little, it was like a 400 square foot, one room house right out there in the wrecking yard Papa Wiley lived in. I went in it a bunch of times. I'll tell y'all another story about it some other time. I thought I seen a ghost in there one time when I was about 9 or 10. But Papa Wiley, that was his little house. Had a little, you'd go in there and there's a little kitchenette right here and a little bathroom, and then there's the rest of, you know, it was just bedroom. He had a little TV set up. And the more I know about that story, the more it kind of ticked. Like, my papa might have been mad at his daddy, but he was still going to take care of it. He built him a house on his property. That man gave his junkyard away to his son-in-law while my papa was away in the army, you know, fighting whoever the hell they were fighting in 1957. And gave his junkyard away. And my papa, mad as he might have been about that, when his daddy didn't have nothing, need some help, he built him a little house right there in the wrecking yard. A tiny house. Apparently my people are the OGs of the tiny house movement. I had no idea. I feel like I ought to be able to cash in on that somehow. I hate the tiny houses now. It's just one more way people have taken the way poor people lived or had to live and tried to make money off of it. That's why I was looking at them little tiny houses the other day. I want to put one from my sister on my property, so my sister got a spot to live, and she's disabled and she's got some health problems, and my dad's getting old, and I'd like her to be here with me and my family and around my kiddos, so they just love her. And but my God, man, some of them things are $120,000, $160,000. I'll build it my damn self. I'll be damned. Why the hell would you pay that for that? I don't care how many hidden shelves you put in that 750. behind that little one room house, there was an old stepside pickup bed. Looked like it might come off a Dodge, old late 50s, early 60s Dodge. It had a big old plastic cover on it. And that is where Papa Wiley grew his pain medication, as he called it, in 5-gallon buckets. It made him a little greenhouse out of a pickup bed. And I think it was some old solar covers or something, old plastic solar covers. I stumbled across it one time playing out in the wrecking yard when I was about 11 or 12 years old. And looked around there and see all them 5-gallon buckets, but there was still stuff growing out of them, you know, because the old plastic had cracked and enough rainwater got in there to keep them old plants alive. Nobody had ever thought to get rid of them. Man had been gone since 79. Them buckets have been sitting there growing pain medication for 11 or 12 years. I found it. I told my dad about it. And boy, heaven, Uncle Bobby got them buckets and got them all out of there. I don't know where the hell they put them or what they did with them. And my dad told me, he said, well, that was for, I was just a kid, but I remember my dad told me, he said, that was, he said, your Papa Wiley had the glaucoma real bad. He had to grow special medicine for his glaucoma. Here I am, 3 generations away. I use special medicine too, even though I ain't got the glaucoma. My boy Wiley was real close to my mom. He obviously knew she wasn't his biological granddaughter. I mean, his wife knew, everybody else knew except her. But he didn't care. He loved her a whole bunch. I have just a brief memory of him sitting in his lap while he talked to his old German Shepherd dog he had. But according to the family lore that I've heard all my life, was he was just, I'm the first grandchild from my papa and my granny on that side of the family, and I was the first one for a little bit. And according to the family lore I've heard all my life, he was just tickled to death to have a great grandson. And they said he liked toting me around in the wrecking yard while the men was working on stuff out there. My dad's got one of the funniest stories I ever heard in my life about him. Papa Wiley was apparently a pretty good old cook. You know, old man get over there in his little house, and every once in a while he'd cook up a mess of something. And so I kind of told y'all how the wrecking yard was laid out. On the other side of the shop was my mom and dad's piece of land that Papa gave them so they could get their little Jim Walters house, and that's where they lived. Every once in a while, Papa Wiley would cook up a mess of food, and he'd take it over there to Mom and Daddy's house. Break a little bread with his granddaughter. One night, my dad said he got home from work. Papa Wiley's right there on the back porch, that big old pot full of chicken and dumplings. He said, the old man can make some good-ass chicken and dumplings. He said, his mama was just tickled to death. He'd come over. They sat there and ate chicken dumplings. And Papa Wiley said, I ain't going to eat all that. Y'all keep the rest of that. Just bring my pot back. The But Daddy knew the old man cooked everything in that pot. So he said, well, I'll tell you what, after he left, he said, I'll put the rest of these chicken dumplings in Tupperware and I'll wash the pot out. Take it back to Papa Wiley. Well, they done ate their fill of chicken and dumplings. And Daddy said they was dumping them chicken and dumplings in the Tupperware, and a big old greasy pot holder was in the bottom of that pot mixed in with the chicken and dumplings and come out and plopped in the Tupperware. And my mama told me my dad went straight to the porch, just retching, just right off the back of the porch. But you know, that old greasy pot holder gave them that little bit of extra flavor, made them taste good, you know? I had to, you know, I've told y'all during the summers between the time I was about, whenever we moved to Houston, they would send me up there for the summer. Time I was about 14 or so. And those summers, I had to wreck the yard to myself. Papa was at work. Granny was on her diet pills, cleaning and recleaning things. Wanted me out of the house. I had this little buddy, Nathan, come play every once in a while when he got out, when he was at his dad, who was one that lived down the road. But I had to, it was like my little personal kingdom, you know? And I liked that Apache pickup. It just looked cool to me. I still like them Apache pickups. But that was about the coolest looking pickup Papa had in that wrecking yard. It's sitting beside a five window, which you know anything about them. Them old five windows got the value on them now, but it's sitting right next to a five window 3100. And I like that Apache pickup. I remember Papa always talked a lot about it. He said, boy, that pickup right there got 283 in it. Is that 283 a scream all day? That pickup got a good 283 in it. Good damn 283. That's a fine truck. Well, I like the sound of that. I used to sit in that Apache pickup, pretend like I was racing with that old 3100 five window. Me looking over at him. And I'm talking hours at a time I'd sit out there in that truck. It had the three on the tree, $10 shifting it and just getting after it, boy. I always won. I just knew that old dumpy looking five window couldn't keep up with that Apache. Wasn't no way in hell. It didn't even have a cool name. How's it gonna keep up with an Apache pickup without a cool name? The funny thing is, some of you have been around my day oneers. You guys have been around a long time, heard me talk about my 72 Ford truck. And if you remember back to that story, when I went to go get that 72 blue Ford truck, my Aunt Janet gave me a choice of that or a five-window Chevrolet pickup she had. Well, it turns out that's the same five-window pickup, one I raced all them times in that Apache. That five-window pickup could have been mine when I got that 72 Ford. And now I can't help but wonder if all them races that lost affected my decision. It never did win. And it sounds like a disorganized mess out there, and I guess it was. There's trees growing up through cars. Every little kind of thing. I told you about the old wooden boat on the hill and the little bay window bus I used to hang out in. But Papa knew every inch of that wrecking yard. I mean, there's days, sometimes he'd come home from work and he'd go out there and just He might be looking for something in the shop, or might be looking, remember if he had something somebody wanted to buy, or he might be meeting somebody out there selling something. But he'd go out there in that wrecking yard and he got home from work. Walk around looking for something other. But he knew every car. He knew everything was out there. Anytime somebody stole something out of the wrecking yard, he was on it. He knew, half the time he already knew who stole it. Because they done asked him about it or something stupid like that. One of them summers, I think I was probably about 13. Little skeeter. He came home from work. I heard his truck pull up in the driveway. At the time, he had about an 87, old tan square body GMC. But it had cut off. It was real loud. I heard him boom, 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 pull up in the driveway. He always had to kind of worry a little bit when Papa come to work. He come home from work in a bad mood. He might be thinking about something you done you wasn't supposed to be doing, you know? Papa got home from work and Granny was in the kitchen cooking. And I was in the living room. And I think I was probably watching Over the Top. That was one of my favorite movies. I watched that one a lot. I've probably seen Over the Top about 30, 40 times. That was one of my favorites. Granny had a VHS where she had saved some movies for me, and it had Smokey and the Bandit 2. And then there was another VHS right beside it, and it had Smokey and the Bandit. Is it 3? And it also had Over the Top on it. I was probably watching Over the Top. That was my favorite. I used to watch Over the Top a lot. I was always hoping Sylvester Stallone was going to show up, take me on around the country in this 18-wheeler and teach me how to arm wrestle and be tough. I was a weak-ass little kid, a little scared of my own shadow. I heard Papa's truck pull up. He got out, and he went off in the wrecking yard for a little bit. I'm just laid there on the floor watching my movie, and I heard him come in the back door and scuff his boots off. And he said real loud, he said, "Which one of y'all been out there messing around with my good Apache pickup?" Well, it was only me and Granny there, so I'm pretty sure he knew it was me. I didn't say nothing. Fussed around in the kitchen a little bit. And I heard him and Granny kind of whispering back and forth, talking back and forth. He said, "I'm hot about that." I heard him. That was his thing. "I'm hot about that. Boy, I'm hot about that." And he said something under his breath. I still didn't say nothing. Even though I knew it'd been me out there messing around with that patch of bigger. Sure enough, he come off in the living room, looked right at me. He said, "Somebody tore up the shifter, my good Apache pickup. Boy, I'm hot about that." And he put them eyes on me, man. He's a hard man to lie to. And sleeves rolled up, big old fists look like hams. He said, "You been out there in Papa's pickup?" "Yes, sir." "That's what I figured. Get your shoes on, boy. Come with me." Boy, when I tell y'all, I took a long-ass time getting my shoes on. I took a long enough time that he hollered something down the hallway like, "Boy, if you don't get them damn shoes on, I'm going to come help you with them. You ain't going to like it." I got my shoes on. I was looking at Granny to save me. She just pretended like she was busy cooking. Wasn't no savior for J-Dub. She just pretended like she's busy. That's the most focus I ever seen somebody put on cooking some skillet spaghetti. She was off in it. Got my shoes on. I went out in the backyard. He started walking straight down that trail to that Apache pickup. He was he wore them old welding hats, but the whole time he's adjusting his hat, the whole time he's walking. And I notice I kind of do the same thing when I get mad or anxious. When I get real mad, I start fiddling with my hat a lot. And I don't know what that, maybe I just picked that up from him. But that's when he got real mad, when he got pretty hot about something, boy. He didn't have no hair, you know, he just had a little bald patch right here and little rings down here. But boy, take that hat off and put it back on, don't mess with that hat. And he was doing that. I knew already at that age he's hot. When he said, "I'm hot about that," that sounds like an innocent enough phrase. That man, he was pissed. And I remember mostly just being scared. I was about to get a butt whooping. And I followed him out there in that pickup, that old Apache pickup. And he yanked open that driver's door. And right there in the seat of that pickup was one of my Archie and Jughead funny books. Still laying in the seat. I left evidence. I wasn't as good a criminal as I am now. He just stared at that funny book in the seat, looked back at me. He picked that funny book up and he rolled it up real tight, like you would a newspaper. And then he sort of sat down in the seat, kind of on the edge of the seat, with one foot in the pickup, one foot outside the pickup. And he reached around there to that shifter, that three on the tree shifter, that I vaguely remembered was sort of dangling weird after a particular intense racing session with that old five window pickup. And then he said that thing, he broke right under his breath again. Boy, I'm hot about that. He's messing with that shifter. He said, "Look at that pin, it's all wallered out." Which kind of thing happened when you're trying to shift a truck without a clutch or not knowing how to shift to work. Boy, he's just a muttering, messing with that thing. Looked back at me. I mean, he had a look at it, just cut you down to a tenth of your size. I was already small. I remember he kind of quit muttering and he dropped that shifter, let it hang down all funny. And he looked at me, he said, "What the hell were you doing in my pickup?" Which seems like a crazy question to me now as a grown man. Like, why the hell wouldn't I have been in it? It was old junk pickup sitting out in the weeds. You can't leave something like that around a young boy and expect him not to be curious, not to be interested, not to get his curiosity piqued. And I was so scared of him, I just told him the truth. I said, "I was racing, Papa." He goes, "Racing?" I was scared to death. I knew I was about to get me a butt whooping. I knew if Papa's butt whoopings weren't fun, I knew I was about to get me a butt whooping. I said, I was racing that other pickup, and I pointed over to that old five-window pickup that was parked in the weeds next to it. And he got real quiet for a minute. And then he started laughing so damn hard. I mean, guffawing, like laughing, which was scarier. It was scarier. Old man just laughed. I mean, for a good 2 or 3 minutes, just laughed. He had a big old deep throaty laughing. It just. And he kind of composed himself and quit laughing, but his eyes were watering. He was laughing so hard. And he looked over at me after a minute. And he said, "Well, did you win?" And I was so scared, I just told him, I said, "Every time, Papa." And then he got laughing so hard, he started wheezing and coughing. He was over there trying to compose himself, and he was wheezing and coughing and laughing. And then I was terrified. When he got done, I was still waiting for that hammer to drop. I was waiting for that butt whooping to commence. He had a bunch of hats, and I liked them when I was a kid. You know, back in those days, that's about all that was available. You didn't have all the, well, at least not out in Kilgore, you didn't have all the fitted ball caps, all that stuff. Everything was like a trucker hat. It was usually for some business or something. And he had this Valvoline trucker hat I used to like to wear all the time when I was in the wreck yard because it looked like the Valvoline racing logo. I had that Valvoline, I called it my racing hat. I had that Valvoline hat on, and when I was a kid, I used to wear a hat real low like that, right over there, you know. Real, I kept that brim real low. And he got out of that pickup, and he shut the door, and he took that rolled up funny book of mine, that Archie and Jughead funny book. And he stuck it out there, and he pulled the brim of my hat. He just tipped the brim of my hat up, just like that. I was looking at the ground. I knew I was in it. He said, "Look me in the eye, boy." I finally looked back up at him. I remember I felt so, he wasn't a tall man, but he was a big man. You know, some people just big. Sure he had some fat on him, but he was just big. He had shoulders like an axe handle. You know what I mean? You just lay an axe handle, shoulder to shoulder. He's a broad, big man, big old palms. Some of you seen that picture I shared on Facebook, the hands, big old hands. Tipped that hat up. He said, "Boy, look me in the eye." I finally raised my eyes to meet his. And I was ready for it. He said, "Boy, you can't be out here just tearing up Papa's good trucks. Everything was his good something. Boy, you can't be out here tearing up Papa's good trucks. You need to be more careful with these old trucks." "Yes, sir." He said, "Also, you need to be watching for snakes, too. I'm going to have to come out here. You're going to be messing around out here. I'm going to have to come out here and weed eat." Which he only done once or twice that I can remember in my lifetime. "Yes, sir." I was still waiting for that hammer to fall. He just grinned and kind of put his hand on my shoulder. He said, "Well, let's get in that house and see what your granny fixed us for supper." "Yes, sir." We walked back to the house, went inside. Granny's over there furiously cooking that spaghetti like that was the most important job in the world. I went back off in the living room, went back to watching my movie. But I could hear him talking in there. I heard my granny say, "Did you whoop him?" And I heard him tell her, "No, I don't need to. He ain't going to do that again." And I remember her teasing him about it. You just soft. Don't soft Bobby Clark. He didn't say nothing else about it until it was bedtime. And every night, once he come and sat in his recliner in his chair and got his shoes off, then we would watch a Clint Eastwood movie or something like that until it was time for MASH to come on. Oh, y'all remember the show? MASH. Well, he liked MASH. He'd watch MASH and laugh his ass off watching MASH. He liked old Hawkeye. And then when MASH would end, it was time to go to bed. And I just knew that. I knew that at that time. When MASH, when I was little, I used to sit in his lap, watch MASH with him. By the time I was, a teenager, whatever, I'd sit there on the couch. And I didn't understand the show, but, it's just, Papa was going to watch MASH. He's going to be there. And then when MASH started wrapping up, you heard that song at the end, you knew it was time to go to bed. I go brush my teeth and get ready for bed. And Granny had me get cleaned up, that sort of thing. Went in there and got in bed. Granny told me good night. And I usually didn't see him again after that, but that night he come in the room. I was laying there in that bed, and he brought that funny book in there, that funny book he had rolled up. He laid that funny book on the bed. He said, "Don't be out there tearing up my good pickup, small boy." "Sir, all right, sleep tight." He walked off to his room. He died when I was 18 years old. But I can't help. I can't help but wonder sometimes that if he knew that I loved that place about as much as he did. I don't know. Maybe he did. He's a pretty insightful old fella. I got some more stories about him, but that's where we'll wrap it up tonight. With that big old fly right there. Boy, I thunk the piss out of you. Let's do some testimonials. First, we got some packages open. I don't know what they all are, but I have a feeling a bunch of them might be Hot Wheels, or all of them might be Hot Wheels. Some of y'all know, been following around. I got excited about this nonprofit I learned about from the guys at Diecast Breakdown. It's called Driven Dreams. And if you want to go to their website, it's drivendreams.org. It's a nonprofit that donates new die-cast cars to kids going through tough times. It started as a Hot Wheels for Hope, but it's grown into a nationwide effort to spark joy through small but meaningful gifts. In 2023 alone, they aim to give away 20,000 cars, and through community events like die-cast and donuts, they collect toys and spread hope one tiny car at a time. You, like I said, you can learn more about it at drivendreams.org. It's not my charity. It just tickled me to death when I heard about it, because I thought it just seemed like a good thing to do. And you ain't got to send your cars to me. We're going to line up. They have a day of giving every October. where they go and donate all these little toy cars, food banks, United Way, such things like that. And I'm building my own collection of cars, and some of y'all have sent me cars. We've received, well, we got one 50 pack, then we got another 50 pack from the same guy, old Donnie, sent us 100 cars, and another fella sent us about 30 or 40 cars, and I got about another 20 cars lined up, ready to go, and lo and behold, Mama went over to the P.O. box, and P.O. box was full of packages. So, don't feel the need. You don't have to send them to me, but if you want to, you can. I'll donate them your name. I'm gonna remember everybody's name. We're making a list, and we'll video it and all that good stuff, and give everybody the shout out. But you guys have really come through with this. It's been kind of amazing. It's a really beautiful thing to me. It just tickles me to death. So let's see what we got here. We'll go with this one first. Some of these, I'm hoping there's a. I don't know who this one come from. It's come from Amazon Fulfillment Services in Pflugerville, Texas. So if you're the one that sent this, please reach out and let me know. There don't appear to be no notes in here. Oh, wait. There might be something here. Oh, hell yeah. Cool. Jerry, I appreciate all you do. You have a great podcast. Keep up the good work. Dave Francis, look at here. Dave Francis sent us a 20-pack of Hot Wheels. That's 20 smiles. That's 20 smiles of kids that ain't got a lot to smile about. That's a... Oh, dang it. That just tickles me to death. I'm going to set them over here for right now. Boy, I might have to organize all this. Boy, I might have to buy me another pickup truck just so I can tote these all to the donation place. Let's see what this one says. Another Amazon fulfillment. It's rattly. It sounds like Hot Wheels. There it is. Y'all, dang. Look at that. That's a 50 pack. Another 50 pack of Hot Wheels. That's. Man, boy, I'm going to count them all up, man. That right there, just them two boxes, that's 70 smiles. That's 70 smiles. Boy, you guys. You're going to make me cry. That's a lot of Hot Wheels right there, boy. Oh, that's the second pack from our buddy Donnie. That's the one we was waiting on. Heck yeah. Heck yeah. That's old Donnie Merton's. That's Donnie Merton sent us 100 Hot Wheels all together. Boy, there's a special place, I think, people do things for children. Well, we got us a big one here. Let's see what's in it. Box directly from Hot Wheels. Mattel Toys. Let's see if we got us a note. Oh, come on. You got to give a note so I know who sent them. Just my tithes to church internal combustion. Well, he asked for no more shout outs, but that's our old guy, Donnie. God bless you, Donnie. My goodness, sir. Golly. I don't even know how many are in here. Good God Almighty. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, there's 36 of them right there in the front row, but there's two more rows behind them. There's a lot of... Of course, first car I pull out is a Volkswagen Bug. Look at that. Yeah. That's a beautiful thing right there. Well, we're going to have a hell of a donation come October, boy. We're gonna make some kiddos have a little better year, I reckon. Boy, I like that. Boy, that tickled me. Thank you. Thank you so much for sending those. We're going to make sure they get in the hands of kids that need them. That's it. That's a real good thing you done. Let's go over here and do some testimonials from last week's episode. Some testimonials, if you will. If you will, Daddy. Me and Cody, we ready for the testimonial. Last week's episode was mostly about Rachel's grandma and her Cadillac. Let's see, the first one from our buddy at Hillbilly Hijinks. I met a guy with the last name Brohammer one time. Brohammer. Boy, that sounds mythological. I still think about that sometimes. I bet he's doing fine with a name like that. Boy, you only got two choices with a name like Brohammer. I have a comedian buddy whose name is Bob Biggerstaff. And Biggerstaff is not a state, that's his real name. But I always thought, boy, you all go one or two ways with that name. You gotta own it, buddy. That's Cinnamon Girl 76, our old buddy. Look at her. Yet another beautiful episode. You're so fortunate if you can count one person in your life like Rachel's grandma. The memory of a special person like that can drive you through the toughest days and keep you reaching to be a better you. I was lucky enough to have a grandma like that also. I feel her in my marrow to this day. She is all the kindness and love that lives in my heart. Let me tell you, Grandma lives in my heart. She's real. I told y'all, boy. Closest thing to royalty I ever met. And I think if I ever meet any actual royalty, I'll still feel let down. Because they ain't as regal as she was. Boy, y'all got me crying and snotting over here. At Beach Dreaming 3681. JW, you carried me through my divorce. You just being real. You saying you're rooting for us. Man, that's just what I needed each week. Thank you. Things are now on an upward swing and they're getting better each day. Well, I couldn't be happier to hear that, bro. I know them divorces is difficult. There ain't nothing, no good that comes of it. But I'm glad that things are getting better for you, brother. And thank you. I don't even know what the hell I was trying to do here when I started this thing. It's all turned into something more than I ever hoped for it. And that's because you, you know, the day one, that's what I said, you day oneers. You guys are the reason that I sit down every week, write this thing, and put it together, and sit out here in this hot ass garage and make it. And I know one day things get easier and I'll have a little, you know, more control over my audio, my surroundings, have some better microphones and such, but I don't think any of those days will be as important as these days. You guys that donated cars, I'm just, my heart is open to you. That is just the most beautiful thing. And if you're interested in it, please go read about it, drivendreams.org. And I'm tickled to death that me and my people's going to be able to put together this big-ass donation and help out some kiddos. Thank y'all, as always, for sharing your Sunday with me. Sorry about the scheduling mishap last week. I don't know what the hell happened. I edited that thing and uploaded it, and I guess it just aired as soon as I uploaded it. I didn't realize what had happened. Also, I'd like to apologize about the audio last week. I have these little Lavelle microphones, and the one I was using crapped out on me about three quarters of the way through the show, and I didn't realize it until it came time to edit. You know, I'm getting off into some deeper stories now and stuff. You guys have inspired me. Some of you have asked for more stories about Pawpaw and more stories about the actual wrecking yard. And it inspired me to really dig back my memories, think about these things. I got a few more lined up for you. I've been trying to plan them out. When I was working on this one, I started writing it on Thursday, and then all that stuff happened this morning, and I had to finish writing it, and I kept trying to figure out what the lesson gleaned here was, you know, other than just your age old own up to what you did type stuff. But I kept trying to figure out if there was some kind of lesson here. I don't think it was as much a lesson for me as it was for Pawpaw Clark when it happened. He wasn't always a patient man. He had a hot temper. But me and him always, we had some kind of something, you know. I know he loved his other grandkids, and they all had their various relationships with him. And if they did get the opportunity to have one, some of them was too young to really get one, I think. Some of them was too young to really know the wrecking yard, which makes me sad and both glad, because they missed out on some other stuff too. Some of the younger ones, sometimes I wonder if they ever have any memory of when the family was all glued. When he was alive, the family was glued together. And every day since he's been dead, the family has gotten farther apart. And I know I'm part of that as much as anybody else. But I heard something about patience the other day. I heard somebody talking about patience. And I'm going to paraphrase it and butcher it all to hell, but it's been rolling around in my head all day, especially after the events of this morning. I was filled with furious anger this morning. I had a little bit of me, old East Texas anger. Person I'm not anymore. But that guy sure wanted to come out. That guy sure wanted to get involved. And I don't think he'd have been helpful in the situation. But when you watch your kids cry and you watch your wife cry, and I take a whole lot. People say a lot of ugly things to me. A lot of ugly things. And that's okay. That's just the nature of the business I'm in. And because I'm honest and I'm vulnerable in here, people can glean enough to figure out how to say things that really hurt me without me knowing enough about them to be able to fight back. And that's okay. That's okay. I know that's the nature of what I'm doing here. But that stuff don't really, that's even when they say some real ugly stuff, it don't really get to me, make me angry like when something hurts my family, when something hurts my wife and my kids. Boy, that's a whole different level of anger that I still struggle with processing. Even when it sometimes, when it happens to be me, that causes the hurt. It's a level of anger that I have trouble processing. And I kept thinking about this thing I heard or read. I don't even remember, to be honest with you. It may have been a damn TikTok. And I tried to remember it and write it all down here. But the one thing I've noticed most of my life, and maybe I haven't even been guilty of doing it too with my father and other people, but folks act like your anger is the real you. That's a common thread you hear people say all the time. But to that point, does that mean your kindness is just some kind of costume? And they'll argue, they'll say, well, anger is raw. It's honest. It slips out when you're not thinking. But I think maybe kindness is just as honest. Maybe even more so. Let's be real. It's easy to lash out when life is kicking your teeth in. Somebody injures you. But what takes a lot more guts and a lot more strength is staying soft in a hard world. Showing grace when you got every reason not to. You know, it's funny. People always remember that one time you lost it. But they forget all the days that you kept cool when all the shit was going on. Those days you bit your tongue and showed up with gentleness, even when you were breaking inside. But nobody ever claps. They don't give you a hero's clap for the effort you put into being patient. Nobody cheers for the quiet love, the little sacrifices. Tears you swallow so someone else didn't have to carry the weight of them. And then they still have the nerve to say anger is the real you. Nah. Kindness is the real work. Kindness is what you choose when you could have walked away. When the pain is so loud you can't hear nothing else, but you answer with peace anyway. Anger's easy. Kindness, that sticks. It leaves a mark in the places that matter. My papa showed me a little kindness that day, a little patience. Here I am, 47 years old, and it's just as fresh in me as the day it happened. I want. I want y'all to understand this. You are not just who you are on your worst day. You are the love you give. Especially when you're not sure it's coming back. I'm rooting for y'all. I tell you that every week and I mean it. Room at the table for everyone. I'm JW and I love you. Deck of Hot Wheels. My God, boy. We're going to have a garage full of them. God, I love y'all. Oh, y'all make doing this even more worth it than just doing it alone. I love you.